Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Changing the Narrative podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Gabriel Warren, along with your co-host, Carl Benson. And we are just excited about all the support that we've been getting for the podcast. So I did want to take a moment just to say thank you to everyone who's downloaded, who's shared, who's listened to it a couple times. So we're excited to keep this thing going. So we appreciate all the support. So now I think today we have an awesome conversation that we're getting ready to get into with Thomas McKinney. Thomas, we're excited to have you on the show today, and we're looking forward to our conversation here over the next 30 to 45 minutes. So welcome, man. Thanks for being a guest on the show.
I appreciate you guys having me out for the second time.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Thomas, it's always great to be able to let the listeners know a little bit about our guests. So if you would kind of just start by sharing with everyone a little bit about yourself and the things you do.
I guess the best place to start is I'm a proud dad. I have two children, Joshua, Thomas, and then my daughter, Victoria, Tori. Speaking of which, her and her teammates just won the 4A state championship in basketball. So a little shout out to Minnetonka girls basketball team.
Congratulations.
Professional. Thank you. Thank you. Well, congratulations to them. Professionally, I'm involved with a company called Titus Grills. It's a brand that we commercialized in August of 2019, and it's been a labor of love since.
Is Titus Grills a local company here in Minneapolis, or where's Titus Grills out of?
Yeah, Titus is locally owned. The parent company is a company called O'Shaughnessy Holding Company. There's several brands with the company, one being Element Electronics. There's Element the Appliance Company. There's a company called Nomo. And then the division I work with is called Titus. And that's
Gotcha. Okay.
TYTUS. Yes.
Right on, right on. Very cool. So in your field, I assume there's a little bit of sales, a little bit of marketing, a little bit of management, all the things that go into sort of being a businessman and running that business. How important is it to be a black man in that business? How important do you feel that is to being a black man in your industry?
At almost every step of life, I realize now, I feel as if there's a microscope or a light on you, and it shines on you, especially since, I'm always in the minority. So in the consumer packaged good industry, I'm out there. It lacks black representation, but then again, what field really doesn't? When you start to think about like all the different private sectors of business that's out there. So it's an opportunity to break stereotypes. It's an opportunity to showcase talents in a different way. It's an opportunity to pave the way for others. I'm not saving the world in what I do, but I recognize more so today that my participation and how I show up and how I go about is helping others that might come behind me do this. So there's a level of stress that comes with that, like good stress, I would say, because there's moments you get lost and you think that you're sort of like everybody else, but then you come to quickly realize that you're not, and that there's a lot of, I would say, pressure to be the best, right? Because mediocrity doesn't really open the door for somebody else to come along, like maybe your colleagues would have. So some people might challenge that assertion, but I think when there's just a few of you doing what you do, there's continued eyeballs on almost everything that you do.
I got you. I appreciate that. Thank you, sir.
And I imagine, that kind of leads to the next question here. Like, are there things that you think about from time to time that motivate you to just keep moving in that space and doing the things you do on a day-to-day basis?
Well, I started it off, right, with my two children, right? My son and my daughter. That's it in a nutshell, right? Like moments when I'm doing well, I'm excited for them. The moments I don't do so well, I'm nervous for them, right? Because I want them to have better opportunities than me. And I think that that's any parent. But then I also think that would probably be any parent who identifies as being Black, right? And wanting their children to have a better future for themselves. And, you know, that has a context to it, right? Like, you know, you look at the events that occur, like say here in Minnesota, it seems to have been a beacon for everything with race, from, and this is just what it is, from Philando Castillo to George Floyd to things of that nature, right? Like here of all places, Minnesota, it happening. So my driving force is, how do I make this a better place for my two kids to excel and do the things that they want to do, be a positive example to them, and so that their future is better than mine.
Thinking of staying on that track of being a, you know, positive influence, not only for your kids, but your community as well. I know a little bit about what you do in community, but can you tell our listeners how you either what you do in the community, how you do it, or how you contribute to the community of Minneapolis and St. Paul?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I started out a few years back. Well, seems like a few years back, but I was a member of the Kids in Need Foundation, and that is a group and organization that was focused on getting school supplies and things of that nature to schools that, you know, the students, most of the students, 70% of them are free and reduced lunch programs. And then after that, I sort of just hung out being a dad and working. And as I saw sort of the, I don't want to say you're always going to be a father, you're always going to be a parent. But I started to ask myself, why am I living here in Minnesota? My parents live in the East Coast. My brother and sister live in the East Coast. So like my immediate family on my side, I'm just here on my own. So I was searching for something, and that's actually how I stumbled across the 100 Black Men of the Twin Cities. And that was good for me because it was a mentoring organization. You know, the one thing I would do if I could do over again is have more children, because they're awesome. And I wasn't going to have any more kids, but this became sort of an opportunity to, I'm not going to say that everything I did was right with my kids, but I look at where they are and where they're positioned to go in life. I feel as if, you know, as parents, their mother as well, we did a good job preparing them. So I thought this, you know, by being a part of the 100, this would be an opportunity to start to work with some other kids who needed that type of mentoring. Maybe they come from a great family and they're just looking for, you know, additional community to support their children, or some households who don't have maybe the structure of a male role model there. So that would be an opportunity. The other thing too is there's strength in numbers. And as much as I thought being out there on my own, pioneering, blazing a trail, doing the things that I was doing, I realized how much I really needed to have more men like me around, right? And for those moments where you don't feel like you can get through the day, or you're just looking for someone who just gets it, right? Like, I know this will sound kind of funny, but like, realize that what it means to be like, when you go hit the lotion and nothing comes out and you got to take the lid off, and you got to slam the thing to get a little bit out, and who understands that, right? And right, like, I mean, right, there's comedy to that, but like, and unless you know what ashy skin is or something like that, you just don't really know that experience. And so these were all the things that sort of contributed to me wanting to be part of the 100. And so it's been good. I mean, it's an organization that it's in its infancy here in the Twin Cities, so I think there's a lot of room for growth. But I think if it stays focused on the positive side of things, and that's why I really like the opportunity, is because it's a chance to, with men of color who are doing amazing things in their professional life, who have their own families and things like that, but we want to come together and be contributing members to what's going on. We want to be a solution, right? And so I think that that part has been fun for me.
Yeah, no, man, that's awesome. And I think that's a really good set up for the next question about, you know, what does success look like from your perspective? You know, when you think about the things you were just saying and some of the previous answers, how would you define success in your own words?
Yeah, I when you guys gave me those questions, I noodled on that because my immediate answer would be like, wow, you know, I have a house and, you know, I have, you know, some material things that others, you know, that we say these are the things that you're supposed to value. But, you know, when I started to really pare it down and think about what was important, right? Like, number one, my success, I think I've been a good son, right? So I don't give my parents enough credit. But my mom and dad have been phenomenal, right? Like, you know, they were born of a different time, you know, in the 40s. My mom might get mad at me sharing that number, but but I mean, I never knew my grandfathers, right? And I don't think that either of them had much of a relationship with them. I look at what my dad, I was alive when my dad was actually completing college. And then my brother and sister were alive when my mom chose to go back to school and get her degree and that type of thing. So I think that that's super powerful for me. And then I look at, you know, my brother and my sister as being amazing pillars, right? The three of us all, we all chose to go into higher education and get degrees and then go out and set journeys, right? And then, you know, my brother has a son who now has a college degree and he's doing his thing. And, you know, my two kids are going to get the degree. And so when I look at success now, I think it's a gener it is each generation an opportunity to get better, or not a, I wouldn't say better, but just an opportunity to do what they want to do. And so my success is just knowing that, like, my kids are set up to go do their thing, right? And I'm not taking any of this with me. Right. So there was this famous DJ in New York City, you know, Frankie Crocker. He said, may each and every one of you live to be 100 and 100 plus a day. So I never know, like, good people like you passed away. And so I never want to, you know another day on this earth without my kids. And I always want to know they're doing all right. But my success is just looking at the nucleus of my family, thinking that, you know, our little snapshot is progressing. Right. And you know, that part is cool, right? So that means the DNA is changing, right? It's woven into the fabric, right? And I think those are the things that you want to pass on from generation to generation, is the ability to compete and to thrive in the communities and the industries and whatever that you're in. So I know that's a little bit wordy, but that's how I see my success now.
No, man, that's awesome.
Very cool. And I'd love to stay on there a little bit and thinking about your son to some degree when this next question. So in what ways do you see portrayals of Black masculinity? How do you see that in the media, the misconception of it, how Black men are portrayed in the media? What's your take on that, and what might be some teachings that you would tell your son about that?
Yeah, you. So I thought long and hard around that one too, and I don't know why there's such an obsession with race, right? To be fully transparent, like I know it's there, right? But I mean, if you I mean to always have to put the word black in front of something, like, that was a great black person, but, you know, we don't say that was a great white person or that was a great Indian person, right? And so, you know, what is this term black supposed to mean when they're all, like, Dawn Staley became the first black coach to, you know, I guess go undefeated or back, you know, that kind of thing. So, you know, is that supposed to, I mean, the achievement is amazing for black women, right? That's amazing. But at some point, you know, you'll be happy when the first go away. And I think that that would be something that's exciting. I think for my son, you know, I always stress to him. I remember he's going through the college application process, and I was like, look, you want to do the best you can do, so you just leave no doubt, right? Like, you know, you want to get the good grades, you want to excel in the classroom, you want to learn, you want to have the best marks, so that way, you know, it there's no like that no one can come along and say, well, you know, we're making an exception for this gentleman or something like that, right? But, like, no. The exception that we're talking about, there really is no exception. It's just an opportunity to open up the door to a group of people that have historically just not had a chance to be in there, right? Like, You know, the whole idea of, you know, 1960s, you know, 70s desegregation and busing and all these types of things, you know, while I was 6 years old when busing was happening, I can distinguish my mom telling me we're not going to live in Boston anymore because, you know, we don't want to be dealing with this stuff. Right. And I share these things that, like, people just act like those who are leading today just forgot about what happened yesterday. Right. So this is sort of part of this thing. So again, as I try to lay this out for you all in the conversation, when I talk to my son, I don't want him to forget his heritage and who he is, but the rules are set in such a way that, like, it's important for him to continually be better, right? And to know that the lens is on him as he's out there. And how do you make sure that they can't take something from you because they're looking for a way for you not to be in the club versus be in the club? And, you know, there's an awkwardness to it too. I remember, like, when we had the young man who got pulled over for, like, illegal tags or something like that. And I think to myself, like, you know, that could never happen to my son, but it could easily happen to my son, because when people look at, you know, young Black men, they are starting to draw a conclusion of who that person is before they even know who they are. And that to me is a struggle, right? And that makes no sense to me, right? And so these are all the things that sort of weigh heavily in my mind. And so I'm just always trying to figure out, as a dad, you know, how do I talk to him about his place and how, you know, how to be careful and things that, you know, seem awkward sometimes to have, because you just want a kid to be off at college having fun doing what college kids do, right? So I know I'm a little bit all over the place, but, you know, talking to my son is, there's the conversations I think I want to be having sometimes, and then the conversations I need to be having sometimes. And so those are difficult, because he's such a good young man, right? That you would think that anybody who met him would never judge him negatively just because he happened to be, you know, a Black man, right? Kind of thing. But yeah, so changing the narrative, you know, the media wants to portray certain things and we allow it to be there. And I think that that's the reason why, like, I like being part of the 100, because we have a chance to teach these young men about ourselves, our lives, and to show them that they're, because they might see, because they're not seeing all the things. It's not like they're writing every day about us in positive ways, right? And so here is a way to show them that they are better than others are trying to portray them as, right? And that they will continually try to sort of change the rules to, because they do. Like, I mean, that's the funny thing about it is our country talks about, like, oh no, we're not racist anymore, but, like, we just continually find a way to create a new rule to hold you down for a country that says they're not racist anymore, right? And you know, so yeah, so I mean that, yeah, so we're talking here like it gets a little bit of emotional, right, when you talk about this whole misconception, right? Because, like, you ask yourself, like, I wake up every day and I go work out, and you know, it's like this whole idea of being on best behavior, right? Not allowed to have a bad day. Like, these are just real things that go through my head, right? Like, if you're going to work and you decide that someone cuts you off and you want to, you know, honk your horn at them, you know, am I just a disgruntled driver at that moment, or am I a disgruntled Black driver at that moment, right? If I'm just having a bad day and I don't speak to somebody, am I now a rude person, or am I a rude Black person, right? What does the Black mean in that rudeness, right? And so these are just all the things that sort of go through, because I don't think that I would walk through if someone didn't speak to me and say, well, that's just a rude white person, right? Like, I just would say that's just a rude person. Mm-hmm. So those are the things that I grapple with when it comes to this misconception of being Black. And there's people who paint narratives of what it means to be that. So I guess it's just really important for us to change those things. And I think that's what you guys are doing here with this podcast, and what you're each and every one of you guys are doing in your everyday lives, to support the growth of Black men in the Black community.
Yeah. So Man, yeah, thank you for that answer. That was really good. I mean, you said so much that I wanted to comment on, but I was like, man, this that everything you said is spot on and true, and I agree with. And I think it also building up on that, I think it leads to some societal expectations that we face as Black men, to where sometimes we feel that pressure to, go out and try to, do all we can to be the financial providers for our family, or to be the breadwinners, or to try to single-handedly tackle that negative narrative that's out there. So thinking about that, how do you think some of those societal expectations, whether fair or not, contributes to, those additional pressures that Black men face in our community?
Well, I was having a conversation with someone. It's hard enough just to be a human, right? Like what part of being human is easy, right? Because generally speaking, we owe who we are to somebody, right? And so for that, now when you start to think about, for me, I'm very fortunate, right? So as I talked about my success, I owe a lot in part to my family, right? So my mom and dad are very important. So when you start to look at the structure of Black communities and, the destruction of the Black family, so to speak, that becomes a challenge, right? And so right then in itself, it's like we don't get an opportunity to talk enough about family. And I'm not talking about like traditionalist in a sense where like mom and dad have to be married and have to be in the same house, those types of things, but just the whole idea of the success of a Black child is going to be infinitely greater if there is a mother and a father involved, and in particular, a father involved in that child's life, plain and simple, right? So that's one thing. And then you talk about like my siblings. And so, you can tell from the culture of my home that there was love, right? And there was expectation, and there was a level of, I don't want to say like because I don't know the right word, but it was safe, right? We knew we were going to be all right. And there's something to be said about, again, because I see it with this being part of the 100, is the young men knowing that this is a safe space, right? And that also talks about, me professionally, right? Like I start to understand where, like, when you look around, you don't, when you're starting to struggle a little bit or having some difficult days and realizing that, who can I lean into right now to help me, help guide or make me feel safe in this moment? And I know that sounds not like masculine or whatever, but the reality of the matter is the pressure is real sometimes. And right, you need to have a network or a group that can help you, right? And because there's strength in numbers, right? And I think that that's also, as I said, it was the reason why I migrated to the 100, because I realized that I would be more, because power is not the right word for me, but like I would just, there would be greater strength for me knowing that I was with a group of that size, right? Me bolting onto that group now just infinitely made me stronger, right? Because I felt like I had people like yourself, Carl, Kitali, Adrian, Wood, all the guys in the 100, right? Now became like guys who I could lean into when there's a struggle at work or whatever, or not even work related or kid related. Hey, how would you handle this with your kids, kind of thing? Like just a good support group. So these are the things that are becoming super clear to me as we go about this work, right? So I guess that would be, I guess, Carl, again, I kind of got off from the question a little bit, but this is
Yeah,
how
this is a conversation. You could just let it rip. You're good. You
I,
can riff
you
all
know,
night
I
long.
mean, we start
It's
going
all
down there
good.
because I, 'cause I, when I tried to prepare for this, I, the things that I really wanted to come out of it is like, when I think about changing this narrative for me, I could only think of, like, I can only think about how maybe I got here today and have achieved what I've achieved. And it really comes down to the whole notion of there were others who made sure that I didn't fail, right? And there was a nucleus at home making sure that I would be okay. And so that part has been cool.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah, again, you can't waste our time. We're here, and you can go and go and go. It's all good.
Well, it's just one of the things where it's so sensitive, right? Like you want to have this conversation with folks on camera about, you know, you want to have this idea that you can completely script out an answer about something, but there's the whole being of self, right? Like, like I am fortunate. I am super fortunate. And I wake up every day struggling sometimes trying to understand why more people just can't get along, right? That's challenging for me, right? And I believe you were, you know, again, because you're part of the 100, you were in that in our last leadership meeting where we talked about some of the initiatives that we needed to take, like gunshot training. And I was just like blown away with that because it just seems like that would not be something I have to teach, right? But then you hear about other chapters where it's very common and prevalent and they need that. And so it just dawned on me. And those eye awakening things for me become a struggle. I remember that one of the first things I went to is 100. And, I was like, why are we here? And, does people really care about who we are? But when I had that shirt on and we were at the community fair and things like that, people were almost like cheering you on, like, thank you, thank you, thank you. We need you. Right. And that was just like, it almost sends a little bit of chills down your back. Right. Because it's like, wow, there's people who really take stock in what you do and what you're trying to do. And that part becomes empowering in itself. Right. So, at this young, tender age that I am, I'm just maybe falling into my sweet spot. Right. And as my kids matriculate and go on off to college and I try to figure out my reason for being here in Minnesota, these things sort of, they're starting to review. Maybe I'm starting to see them because I'm starting to look for them. Maybe they've always been there, but now I'm really starting to look for them. And so that part has been really cool for me.
Right. Thinking of some of the things you spoke about over the last, 25 minutes, what would you say would be, if you could pick one, and if this podcast did its job, right? What would be one misconception about Black men you would like to see eliminated or completely eradicated? If there was one thing, snap your finger, make a wish, and say, this thing is no longer a misconception of Black men that white people have or society as a whole has.
I probably would say, I think that there's this notion that we're predestined to be failures. And the reality of the matter is we've been more successful than people can give us credit for. And if they didn't necessarily rewrite history or just told history as it occurred, that might be one of the biggest things, is that it's obviously an oppressed failure type. They're going to fail kind of thing. So that might be one thing that would be big. And I think if you started to rewrite that, there would be greater access to resources that would continue to build on our communities. And I think there would be greater support, right? Like at the end of the day, you can't put enough prisons together to put us away in them, right? We're here. We've been part of the fabric of the Americas forever, since the beginning. We've interwoven ourselves from the beginning. We've shown ourselves to be, through it all, true Americans, right? Like, if you really think about it, right? Like, I mean, fuck, we're going to put you in slavery, but we still want you to, love this country, right? Like, and I do love this country, but I'm just saying, like, I mean, really think about it. Like, we're going to beat you. We're going to, lynch you, we're gonna shoot your heroes, we're going to, the list can go on and on and on and on and on, right? And a lot of misery. And what in turn we will give back is a great amount of love and everything that comes with our culture, from food to music to entertainment to law, doctors. I mean, in every aspect, in every facet of life, it's been there, right? And I mean, imagine if the roles were kind of reversed, right? Like you would say, like, at what point, like, would you be like, almost like, I'm checking out of this thing? So I think that part is cool. So I'd say the misconception I would change is dispel the notion that we're predestined to be failures. I would want to emphasize the need to invest more in the community. So that way we can continue to change the narrative. Because I think that, like, there's a tremendous amount of talent in that community, right? So that's what I would do.
Fantastic.
Man, yeah. This has been an awesome discussion, man. And I know that, you know, we have scratched barely the surface of the topics and the discussion that we could have. But one thing that you said, man, that you know, you were talking about, like, you know, other people, you know, being a product of other people that's gone before us. I know one thing that I remember when I was kind of in school and everything, and they used to always tell us, like, we're standing on the shoulders of giants who've gone before us. And that was kind of like when I was going through my doctoral program, they would always remind us of that. Like, we are going in a place where we wouldn't be able to walk down those paths without other people that have gone before us. And I think that is true for all of us. I mean, especially all three of us right here on this Zoom, because that's true. You know, there's no way I could be where I am today without the teachers and the coaches and the mentors and the pastors and, you know, all the people in the neighborhood who made sure that I was staying on the right track and not getting caught up in things that probably would have sent me down a path of, you know, something that I didn't want to be a part of. So man, that really stood out to me a lot when you were answering those questions. So I appreciate you for, you know, kind of sharing that and for being transparent about it.
I mean, if I could add one thing there too, right? Like, you know, and this is the thing for me too, is like, because you sort of, for me, I've become a little more aware of some things, like the examples of success are not always prevalent for us, right? So, you know, Carl said, well, what would I change as a narrative? Like it should be okay to shine more light on success, right? Like, I'm happy that we have Black Americans who have achieved things like the Supreme Court, achieve things like presidency, things like that. Like I don't put it as like, well, they got there and they didn't do enough. No, they got there, they achieved, right? And I think that part is important as we look at this thing, right? And so shining the light on more success will, that's the narrative, right? Like, you can choose the narrative, right? Like, we were just, before we got on tape, we were just talking about the game today, right? There's so many narratives that people want to talk about today's game between South Carolina and Iowa. But the reality of the matter is the game of women's basketball is in a better place because two fantastic teams, one of the greatest to ever get on the court, laced it up today and played for the championship, right? And this wasn't about Black. This wasn't about white. This was about young Black and white women out there showing the world they can hoop. And the only thing I texted my son, it was like, I can't believe they're playing this game at 2 o'clock on a Sunday when this should be prime time theater for everybody to see. Yeah. Right. And it means even more to me because my daughter is a hooper. Right. And she's going to play on that level next year. And I'm just so happy for her because you've seen the growth of the game. Right. And for me, it even takes a different stand because Dawn Staley, the coach, I watched her play. I mean, she was at the University of Virginia when I was there. She was a little younger than me, not by much, but a little bit. But like, I was watching what they were doing then in the game, and I watched what she did as a player, and now what she's ascended to as a coach. That's the narrative that people should be talking about, right? Like, you know, and I mean, so like, these are the things that we have to do. We have to force people to stop wanting to go down a place, debating, so to speak, and talk about the things that are irrelevant, right? And just be lifting others up and be excited about the possibility of more. But they all want to make their little bit of money on it. So it'll be like, well, you know, like, hey, let's go to the easy thing, which is that racial narrative, like these white kids versus these black kids. Come on, these kids play together and hoop together all the time, man. They're on the same teams when it comes to the country, USA, this, that, and the other thing. They hoopers, right? They played on the same circuit, the whole bit. So this is the piece. So yeah,
very cool. Can you let the listeners know how they can follow you, keep in contact, or what socials are you on if you are on social media?
Well, I mean, the easy one, I'm on LinkedIn. That's the easy one. And then, you know, you can always find me at the 100 Black Men of the Twin Cities as another way to connect with me.
Awesome.
Awesome. Well, Thomas, man, thank you very much for the discussion, for you know, stretching us. And I'm sure the listeners, their perspectives will be stretched, man. I think this is what we're trying to do. We're trying to help change that narrative, and it starts with good discussion. So we appreciate you for taking out some time with us today, and we're looking forward to kind of hearing what the listeners have to say about this episode.
Well, I appreciate you guys taking the opportunity to interview me for this opportunity. You guys are doing good things. You guys wear a lot of hats. As I say all the time, I'm like, I'm trying to keep up with y'all.
So, appreciate you. Thanks, bro.
All right.
All right.